Black revolutionaries, distillery owners, Italian fashion retailers, and Motown Grammy winners all share their best stories never before told in any other media outlets on Detroit Is Different. Visit DetroitIsDifferent.com or download the Detroit Is Different app on Apple's App Store or Google's Play Store.
All right. Welcome back to Detroit Is Different, and we keeping everything rolling, giving information, different people, dynamic, as we say. It's artists, it's people in politics, it's people in just community, but also it's like when you combine community and business, you're definitely touching on one of these heartstrings. So, Tansley Stern, how are you today?
Doing awesome. Thanks so much for having me.
Definitely, definitely. So, you're representing one of the entities that that definitely, just like in the infrastructure, have been, you know, strong for Americans, definitely in communities. Mm-hmm. A credit union.
Yes.
Community Financial Credit Union, what it represents, and just a gateway for getting people some access to some capital.
That's
access
right.
to capital is like the business way of saying some money. money to make capital investments, meaning like buy a home, get a car, get some home repair, like when different things happen. And nowadays, it's even getting into like a lot of medical expenses as credit unions have been aligned and you know, help people through some of the most difficult times. It's like it's been certain gateways of like some key things that just impact, you know, the rest of not just a person, but a whole family's life.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
So where a lot of banks that aren't necessarily functioning on behalf of, what would I say, the common man, the non-business owner, the small business owner. And for a lot of people that know, a small business is basically like making less than like $10 million a year. So even when you think you're doing well, you probably aren't at the level where a bank looks at you like, you know, so credit unions do work with people. So
absolutely.
With this Detroit story, as we say in the area, I know you from the area.
Mm-hmm.
Where do the roots come?
That's
how do
right.
you connect to this way?
Absolutely. So I grew up in Hillsdale, Michigan. So the great news from being from Michigan, we've got our hands as our map. And so Hillsdale's right where Michigan, Ohio, and Indiana come together. And my family's had a farm there for 120 years.
Wow.
Yeah. And my dad grew up in Detroit. So I grew up with him driving me around, showing me where he lived. He had a lot of different homes here. And my family just cares deeply about this state. I had the opportunity to go to the University of Michigan. And when I graduated from there, I had 2 degrees, one in English and one in psychology. And my dad at the time was super worried that my future was not going to be particularly bright with those choices. And so I was looking for jobs in both marketing and social work. And I stumbled into a small credit union in Metro Detroit, headquartered in Waterford, Michigan, the basement of a Macy's store. And I interviewed there for a marketing specialist role and really fell in love with credit unions and the difference they make every single day with everyday Americans.
All right. So with that, let's talk about that. Because a lot of people, even me sometimes, it's like bank, credit union. Well, what's the difference? What is the difference between a bank and a credit union?
Yes. So credit unions are not-for-profit financial cooperatives. And so very simply, we are not chasing quarterly profits for shareholders. Our shareholders are our members. Every single member owns a piece of the credit union. And so that gives us the opportunity to return any profits that we do make back to our members in the form of better rates, better technology, better access. One of the other really unique defining factors that we're really proud of at Community Financial is that our board is volunteer. So they actually give their time just to help us to get to what we call our ends, which is really about how we improve the financial lives of the members that we serve all over the great state of Michigan. So it's a really unique business model. One of the other things that I often talk a lot about that you don't see really anywhere is that credit unions, because we're cooperative, do collaborate in really unique and powerful ways. And so, you know, if I were running into a challenge today and I had a curiosity about how another credit union were doing it, I could pick up the phone and say, hey, what do you do about that? And people would be really open and willing to share. Credit unions come together in that collaborative way to bring new solutions to consumers. So it's a really unique business model. It's one that I think changes the lives of human beings. And that's what I'm all about.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you said, so you go there with the idea, kind of like more in my world, like marketing, communications, and you're like, okay, I can work in this space.
Mm-hmm.
when did it start hitting you that, okay, this is something that's cool, and this is something where I see myself?
Yeah, so I was really lucky in that first credit union. I worked for a man named John Normando. He was a CPA by trade. CFO was his role before he was the CEO. And he knew something that I think many of us struggle with, which is you are best, particularly in business, when you can bring together people that have differences, and those differences make the whole organization better. You know, as a CFO, marketing wasn't a thing that he spent a lot of time talking about, thinking about, and so having somebody that had a different set of gifts really helped the organization to be even more impactful, and I think we were an exceptional team. The other opportunity I really had there under his leadership was to touch different parts of the organization. You know, as a smaller organization, I had the opportunity to start in marketing and then lead lending, lead the branches, lead the contact center. And having that different exposure really helped to prepare me for those next steps. And what I knew is that my dream was to become a CEO. And oftentimes, when you start in the marketing seat, particularly in credit unions, people are like, she's really good with pretty pictures, but can she actually lead? Mm-hmm. And so much of what I did over the course of my career was take opportunities to expand that repertoire and experience and really be able to come to where I am today and have that breadth of experience to hopefully lead the organization forward.
Okay, and at the time, like, how old are you when you're doing this?
Yeah, so I started there. I was 21 years old, 1998.
Okay. Well, I do want to, as in this series of, I'm highlighting so many, like, women in the area for Women's History Month.
And thank
I had
you.
Another interview recently with a writer that's one of the younger people walking in.
Yeah.
And just that social dynamic. What is it like being a younger person leading older people, and especially like when you're like young as I have these talks with my kid's sister when she was like getting in this position, because I remember what it was like for me.
Mm-hmm.
And at times I would find it kind of challenging. Mm-hmm. How did you take that on? What was that like, especially when you go from marketing to lending? You know, and it's somebody that's like, what this whippersnapper, you know what I'm saying? Like, how did you deal with that?
You know, my perspective is, you know, as a leader, we are best when we are open, vulnerable, and learning together. You know, when I started taking on lending, there was a person that I was working with, and she and I are your friends today. And, you know, I had concerns about how she was going to feel because she'd been leading lending for a long time and now reporting to me. I hadn't done that before. And what we were able to build was really, you know, I was bringing gifts from a leadership perspective. I was bringing gifts from a strategy perspective. And I was willing to dive in and roll up my sleeves and really learn lending and learn from her. And I think one of the things that, again, I really took from John was this idea that no matter who you are, no matter your experience, no matter your age, all of us bring these different things together. And the more diverse the team, I think the better in terms of the outcomes. And we talk a lot at CFCU about this idea of belonging. And I think we create belonging in an organization when you really encourage that difference to bring stronger outcomes to the organization.
Okay. And that's unique that you speak to diversity, which I definitely want to touch on.
Right.
But also, you gave some, as I always say, you gave some game and some insight. Yeah. But I want you to expand a little on that for that young person. Because it happens every day. Like it's like you're working a job and then somebody says, like, guess what? We want to put you in a management position.
Right.
And you're thinking to yourself, like, I'm 23. Everybody else here is like, you know, these people, like, got kids and families. Right. I just want to hang out with my friends on the weekend. You know what I'm saying? Like... What advice would you give that person in embracing that with an attitude where, you know, they can walk in with some confidence, but also walk in with humility?
Yeah, absolutely. So you touched on one of them, which is humility. You know, I think that that's one of the most important things a leader can bring to bear. You know, I know that every single day, first of all, I'm going to skin my knees. I'm going to make some mistakes. And secondly, that there's a human being in my life every single day that's going to teach me something. And I think coming into the world with a sense of curiosity is a really important way to allow yourself to continue to learn and to approach leadership in a way that brings people along. Mm-hmm. I also think that, you know, the advice that I give is one of our values, which is to hustle and grind. You know, I think one of the things I knew throughout my career was that I was going to be seen as somebody that, again, was just a marketer, right? Mm-hmm. Now, I think marketing is a super important competency, and quite frankly, storytelling is one of the most important things credit unions can do. And
repeat that for the people.
Just right? That's right. Storytelling matters. And here's the thing. You know, the best way for you to gain credibility when people doubt you is to keep hustling and grinding and continue to create impact. People eventually start to notice, and they see that, and you build that credibility one day at a time.
Okay, so you speak to that diversity, mm-hmm. and then I really was pushing the young lady I was interviewing because she's a Zennial.
Oh, okay,
always,
yeah.
Always as we talk about the differences, mm-hmm. Being Black, especially in a city like Detroit, that is so, like, this region is so segregated.
Right.
When I look to diversity and mm-hmm. I hear diversity, mm-hmm. and you know, completing my college journey. Mm-hmm. You know, what I think of, I'm starting Henry Ford Community College, like, seriously, maybe around, I don't know, what was it, 2010.
Mm-hmm.
So this is before the textbooks were filled with all this information about the crash and needing diversity. Like, you know, I start business school mm-hmm. where the textbooks are written old school style, mm-hmm. like where they start off like the origins of business, you know, basically income statement, balance sheet, you know, mm-hmm. things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Then like around 13, 14, it starts like you need to be ethical.
Mm-hmm.
Part of ethics is diversity.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be unique because I would be in class, you know, this Black dude from Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
And then most of my professors would be like, you know, I don't know, like 60, 70-year-old white dudes from God knows, like the area, and, you know, staunchly. And they're given the text information, and I would be debating, just challenging
mm-hmm.
on the value of what diversity is. Mm-hmm. And I always felt that if it's not instrumental within the intentionality of how something is designed,
mm-hmm.
then how do you bring that into the fold to see the value of that?
Mm-hmm.
And that so really, I guess that's where, like, what are some of the values with diversity if you don't even really necessarily even have a capacity to reach that audience?
Mm-hmm. Well, for us, you know, our belief is that, first of all, it begins with valuing it as an organization. You know, when you look at our values, that is the defining piece, which is belonging. Mm-hmm. The reason we say that is that, you know, I think for most people, as it relates to work, whether you're working at home and you're moving across the hall to a different room to begin your day, or you're getting in your car and you're driving somewhere, I think most human beings arrive at that space of work and put their work self on mm-hmm. and leave a whole bunch of themselves either in the car or in the other room.
Yeah.
And what we want to accomplish is a place where people truly feel that belonging so that their whole self is a part of our work. And my belief is that we will create better outcomes for human beings when people feel like they can truly be who they are. And the only way to accomplish that is to value diversity, to create belonging, that, you know, I'm a better person when I've got somebody next to me who's got lots of different perspectives, lots of different experiences. When we're open enough to share those together, we're just going to get to a better place.
I like that you present it like that, because even when I was, because I interpret that as like being more centered around goal orientation,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
As even with the podcast,
right?
Because we're resetting and preparing the 10-year anniversary of Detroit Is Different is coming up, so I hired a network manager, and I'm looking to like onboard more people to get their buy-in,
right?
But it's reciprocity. If I want to get you more aligned with my value system, right. I have to get I have to align with your value system.
That's right.
And it's a comfortability.
Mm-hmm.
And hence the Zennial generation,
right,
just across the board, is just known to, like, it's some disconnects in how we even look at work culture, of like, well, it's work time. Like, here we go, classic example. You know, I've had so many, like, you know, like, you'll be talking to a Zennial, they'll be, And it's like, yo, are they paying attention? And then you'll be like, oh, I'm taking notes.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, if I'm in a room and then I'm conducting a meeting, I got Zennial here, I have Gen X there. The Gen X person is taking notes the old school way,
right?
Looking at the Zennial like, they don't even give a damn about what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm trying to facilitate both, be inclusive.
Right.
And one thing she said, like, not be talked down upon because you're the youngest person in the room, too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, finding that balance. Where do the values all align towards that goal?
Mm-hmm.
But you can bring in some of who you are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this isn't necessarily the easiest of things to do. Because it would be so much easier just to find people that just naturally, they're connected to our program.
Yes.
This is what I think work is. This is what I think working hard is. This is what I think a new idea. And this is how I think you should execute stuff. The project management plan and all of that stuff. This is how we do things.
Yes. Well, it's interesting you say that because frequently when we talk about people strategy or HR strategy, human capital, I often hear people in business say, this is the soft stuff.
Yeah.
And my belief is it's the hardest thing we do. Hmm. You know, when you think about what it takes to get to know a human being well enough to understand, okay, you know, they're going to take notes differently. They're going to see the world a little differently. You know, imagine, I often use my daughter, Mackenzie, she's 12, as an example. You know, she's been swiping at an iPad since she was not quite one. Mm. That makes me a lousy mom. But that also demonstrates that, you know, her life experience, of course she's going to take notes this way. She wouldn't even think about getting out a pen and paper to do that. And so part of our responsibility is to understand the spectrum of human experience and be able to bring that together and demand that all of us are going to care enough to allow that diversity to thrive.
So in that same space,
mm-hmm.
It was some other things that even came about. Like COVID-19 mm-hmm. changed the world.
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm.
But when we think about even just what we think of work and productivity, mm-hmm. it definitely, like, this whole concept of work from home.
Sure.
As an entrepreneur, I love, you know what I'm saying? I've been in this space.
Right.
My father being a CPA that's had a home office for years. Yeah. Like, it was something natural for me.
Sure.
Some people, it was like, I hate being here.
Yes.
But some people, it added to the flow.
Uh-huh.
And some people started off maybe being discouraged, but then it's like, okay, I'm a mom. I can really get my kids
mm-hmm.
to school and still complete the task, really kind of like on my own plan.
Yes.
But this clashed with certain organizations
mm-hmm.
saying, no, we want you back in the office.
Yeah.
Also, because I think it's a lot of office buildings across the world that were saying to themselves, like, damn, if another person breaks this lease, you know
right,
what I'm saying?
Right, so, right.
I think our world leaders had a little incentive and nudge from them, too, because, you know, but... Like, even something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because it changed the whole concept of workflow where now possibly that youngest Zennial
mm-hmm.
that's more familiar with the Zoom meeting, the
right.
the grabbing Slack and, right. and, you know, project management softwares and stuff, they're like, they've become now, they've superseded mm-hmm. the person in the office that knows where the file cabinet mm-hmm. is and knows this system and that system.
Mm-hmm.
You are in the mix as this is happening.
Yeah, absolutely.
What was your take on, like, this transition in that understanding? And do you think that companies that were more diverse, that mm-hmm. had a younger, and I'm just speaking of age alone,
sure.
do you think that they, you know, were they able to capitalize a little bit more? 'Cause the other reality is, it, you know, the workforce, a lot of people walked away from the workforce, like, almost the minute that happened.
Right. The way that we think about it at Community Financial is, you know, first of all, we had a strong remote work perspective well before I came. My predecessor, Bill Lawton, really was a believer in remote work for years. And so our organization was really well equipped for that.
Mm-hmm.
And what we believe is that we have to be prepared for the future of work. And that future is dynamic. It's shifting right now. And I don't think that the extremes are the answer. You know, there have been a lot of sort of mandates around everybody's back or no, we're all going to be remote. And at least for us, the answer lies somewhere in between. You know, we have 14 physical locations. I don't have quite the same flexibility in a branch location that I do for somebody that works in IT. And so being able to be really open about that future of work and the way it comes together and understanding that for different roles, there are going to be different expectations. And again, I think coming at it from this place of curiosity, we've had some opportunities just recently to bring in leaders that don't work in the state. And, you know, when I had some of those early conversations, my brain went to our formal models, right? Which is, okay, well, if you're going to lead branches for us, you got to be right here in Michigan. Mm-hmm. And I woke up the next morning after those conversations and thought, wait. If you're talking about building the future of work, you've had that role before. How many times were you actually in the locations? Okay, is there a different way to look at this? And so as we build that future of work, we know that we are going to learn an awful lot. We are approaching it with an openness to different kinds of ways of bringing work to life. Mm-hmm. And we know that a year from now, we're going to have a lot more answers than we do today.
Yeah, I feel that. Because possibly when by the time Mackenzie's our age,
right?
You know, Kenzie will be like, all right, so I got clients in Indonesia,
yes.
Malaysia,
right? Yes.
China,
yes.
Nigeria. Uh-huh. You know what I'm saying? Like I'm transversing
yes.
in multiple ways, you know, bringing in technology.
Mm-hmm.
So that business model, you know, will supersede a lot of things. Like
yes.
even within my lifetime, I remember, you know, people used to jokingly talk about the University of Phoenix as
right.
it was starting.
Mm-hmm.
And like, oh, who will go to... Who go to college online? Like,
right.
Okay, surprisingly, like you Zennials watching right now, it was like a real discussion about who would go online. Then
right.
you slowly started seeing, like, one second, they're competing as a good university
mm-hmm.
with some larger, like just state
yeah.
universities in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's like, wow, they're competing with the largest state institutions like U of M. Then yeah. you looked up, it's like, wow, University mm-hmm. of Phoenix has like basically half the market
right.
share of all college education.
Right.
And then we started seeing Harvard even say, you know, we're exploring online education. You know, and this is one of those opportunities in thinking progressively,
mm-hmm.
you know, whereas, you know, being in that mix and to be a leader, to know when mm-hmm. to make that call of like, okay, how do you stick to what's old versus mixing what's new?
Mm-hmm.
Where do you make those decisions?
You know, we want to test and try things. And so, again, we've got leaders living in Wisconsin right now. We've got an IT leader that is in our northern region, and we've got branch locations there. So it's actually really wonderful to have somebody leading in IT that can mm-hmm. easily go to those locations, that understands that market for us. And we want to continue those explorations. Mm-hmm. And again, there are going to be some times where a more traditional approach, our branches are an easy example, mm-hmm. makes the only sense, because if we're going to serve somebody face-to-face, we've got to be in that physical location. So
mm-hmm.
we want to test and try. There are going to be some moments where a more traditional approach works. And even in our branches, I want us thinking boldly about how we can what I call Uberize their experience, right?
Okay.
If you think about, if we use technology to understand when our members are coming into our physical locations, we could build a lot more flexibility into a schedule that would still require somebody to come in to the physical workspace, but maybe their schedule is a lot more flexible so that they get a little bit of that benefit that many people have seen as it relates to remote work.
Hmm. And then that also, I think, even just by saying that, it reminds me of the days where I'd be with my grandmother,
right.
From this house. And
yeah.
she, you know, very regimented. And I see as I grow old, I can't wait to be regimented. Like, go to the bank this day,
yeah.
go to the post office this day,
right.
go to the... But it also were some other rapports there where I knew my grandmother's banker.
Right.
We knew some of these people.
Mm-hmm.
Also, during our lifetime, I believe that think corporations kind of became more like of a disconnect from the personal relationships.
Mm.
So when I hear stuff like that,
yeah.
I feel like naturally that's going to lead to the banker and the consumer having a closer relationship.
Without
like,
question.
Hey, I'm picking up the kids at 4.
Yeah.
So if you want to come at 3:30, that's cool, or I'll be there at 4:30.
That's right.
And now that's like, oh, I understand that, as opposed to the veil of like, these are the hours, this is the operation, this is the system, and
mm-hmm.
walk in, and you know what I'm saying? Like,
mm-hmm.
what's that Pink Floyd video or whatever?
Yes.
Like a machine or something.
Yes.
And as you talk about thinking creatively.
Yes.
something that really brings you here.
Or, right.
Or reached out.
Yeah.
Path to home ownership.
That's right.
Speak on that.
Absolutely. So we believe at Community Financial that we have a role to play as a financial cooperative in meeting people in both their joyful and dark moments and everything in between. You know, if you think about typical financial institutions, the commercial you often see is of a couple running down the beach into their retirement, which is awesome.
Yeah.
And we want to be in those joyful moments. We also want to be in some of the darker ones as well. And one of the experiences that is so near and dear to many, many people is having that first home. Mm-hmm. And it is about the dream of home ownership, you know, being able to spend time in your space that you feel most safe with human beings that you love and care about. It's also about building wealth. You know, for most people, that asset ends up being something that can't transform their financial situation and frequently the situation of those future generations as well. And quite frankly, around our country, but specifically in Michigan, housing affordability is a massive issue. Mm-hmm. And so as a lender, as one of the strongest lenders in the state, we felt like there was a role for us to play in that. So we created the Path to Home Ownership really out of some of the challenges that we were seeing in our northern region with the Gaylord tornado. Mm-hmm. We saw that there were people that were facing challenges in terms of being able to rebuild a home and have that home. And also what we were hearing here in Detroit and really across southeastern Michigan as well. And so this program really takes out a lot of the challenges that people face. And one of the key attributes that we're looking for is that lots of people are paying really hefty rent. If they can pay that rent and they're paying it consistently, then there's a lot of possibility for them to have a home and start to build that asset as well. So we're really, really excited about that opportunity.
So with that, mm-hmm. And I have a lot more questions.
Totally. Yep.
Yes. Even connecting to the generational discussion.
Sure.
So let's just start there.
Yeah.
The crisis that we witnessed in 2008, 9, 10, mm-hmm. 11 that kind of carried over, I think changed the arc of a lot of young people looking at what home ownership
sure.
is.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of people that now are like, you know, in their 20s
mm-hmm.
that remember the traumas
sure.
that their parents
mm-hmm.
Their closest loved ones experienced
right.
From that crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And it's definitely led to more of a disconnect of the concept of, they call it the shared economy.
Sure.
Kind of mm-hmm. like you say, Uberizing.
Yeah, things. That's right.
Mm-hmm. Hence these ideas, Airbnb, mm-hmm.
yeah.
Uber, Lyft, mm-hmm. things like that. Like,
yep.
like I don't want what used to be seen as an asset of ownership
right.
mm-hmm. is now seen as the liability mm-hmm. of possibly something that could lead to the catastrophe that mm-hmm. I just witnessed my family experience.
Sure. Right.
And the tough thing about communities like mine,
mm-hmm.
and I think a lot of other communities throughout Michigan, but especially mine,
mm-hmm.
just due to a lot of refinancing, mm-hmm. a lot of people that where the assets were in their family
mm-hmm.
lost that.
Sure.
Now, when I'm 6, 7, 8, 9, I may not understand all of the science, what, why, and all of that. All I know is grandma used to have a house.
Mm-hmm.
Grandma lost her house. Grandma walked away from her house as I grow a little older and understand it. And now we have to help grandma monthly with it.
Right.
So I don't ever want to be in that position
mm-hmm.
or be that burden or right. something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's a real reality that yep. that I think exists right now in America.
Mm-hmm.
So almost like home buying, in my opinion, kind of shifted more to a business perspective as mm-hmm. opposed to like families looking to say, this is an asset that I can rely on that'll be good and instrumental.
You know, it's funny. There was a lot of concern about that coming out of the Great Recession. And what's interesting is that while we do see a delay in homeownership, right, the average age of home mm-hmm. buyers is escalating,
mm-hmm.
we do still see that people eventually want to find that dream. And it also is a little bit different, right? It might mean that the square footage is lower. You know, there's, I think, a lot of practicality as the next generation thinks about that home ownership and the way that they want to bring it to life. And it is still, for many, many Americans, the thing that they wish to strive for, and we want to walk with them towards that.
Mm-hmm. So in that path of walking, mm-hmm. I would say, how much does it rely on, like, programs like this? Like, because it's also that give and take.
Absolutely.
You can't just expect the buyer to say, okay, look, you're going to get on our program.
Right, right.
It is where else you going to go.
Yes, yes.
Because where else they're going is paying rents, mm-hmm. you know, that are, you could have owned this home within, like,
that's
maybe,
right.
you know, 10 years paying this much rent.
Right. Well, and that's part of what we're really excited about with Path to Home Ownership is that, you know, if somebody's already paying a pretty substantial amount monthly to a landlord, we would love for that to be going into a space where they're building that asset and that eventually they're building something for their future, for the future of their families, and also the moments in between. You know, a home in so many ways is about the daily routines and joys and space for sorrows that all of us have. Mm-hmm. And if we can be a part of bringing that to life for Michiganders, that's where we want to be.
Yeah, I think it's assets. Like, I mean, if it wasn't for my grandparents having this vision, I wouldn't be in this space right
mm-hmm.
now, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It can connect
yes.
and be an asset mm-hmm. where a lot can come from it
yes.
more so than just cash.
Yes.
More than just cash. It's not
yes.
like, oh, you know,
right.
granddad died, so it's time to sell the crib.
Right.
No.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, it's other assets
yes.
that a home can represent
yes.
intrinsic assets,
mm-hmm.
intrinsic values.
Yes.
That I'm not necessarily saying, I mean, if you've been renting in the space for forever, like I got a grandma in Cincinnati there,
mm-hmm.
or relocating here soon.
Sure.
And she's been renting in that space for at least 45
wow.
years.
Wow.
So when you think
yeah,
about that,
right.
you know, and it
yeah.
was her choice.
Sure. Yep.
But when you think about that, it's still going to be different now. Moving forward, if ever 10 years from now I'm down in Cincinnati, it's not gonna be that same connection
yeah,
as a home.
Right. Well, and one of the things that we take really seriously as a credit union is financial literacy. You know, we have over 50 student run branches across mm-hmm. both southeastern Michigan and in the northern region. And what we know is that while I wake up every morning dreaming about financial services, the average human being doesn't really think about it that much.
No.
And so if we can bring that to life and help people not only have the education, but to do so in a way with tools and technology that makes it real and tangible, that, again, can be life-changing. You know, when you've got that knowledge so that the next decision is a little bit easier, a little bit more informed, and that it's really connected to those financial moments that matter, that can ensure that the next choice you want to make, the next dream that you're chasing, is fueled with really strong tools.
So in this program,
yeah,
is it one of those things where, like, a person comes there, like, look, I'm thinking I would like to get a home in
mm-hmm.
2 to 3 years.
Sure.
Like, what's the best way to take advantage of this?
Yeah.
How should a person connect with it?
Yeah, absolutely. So easiest way to connect with us is our website, probably at cfcu.org. You'll find our phone number there. You'll find all the details about the program there. And we've got amazing human beings. You know, we talked about belonging earlier, and, you know, our team is what brings to life everything we do. And we know that particularly when we talk about Path to Home Ownership, we talk about a mortgage loan, that can feel really heavy. And so our team is really well equipped to be able to ask good questions, to understand the goals that somebody has. And whether they're 2 or 3 years away, or they found their dream home and they want to take action, we can really work with them in that space.
So, and we were talking about this a little bit before,
yeah.
before we started.
Mm-hmm.
Like I say, this is like, look, personally, I love a lot of you all, but from a business perspective,
mm-hmm.
It's tough because realtors. And I understand they're salespeople, so they gotta, you know, they gotta make bank. But I believe it's a lot of realtors that are leading certain people astray in these processes. And people are being taken advantage of. How in this journey, when we think of what's happening and how it's happening, you know, how can people, what advice do you give to even making, you know, who to trust? Because it's more than realtors. I mean, you're going to have a realtor, appraiser. You should have a real estate attorney. You know, like, how do you even discern who to trust in this process of home ownership? Because this isn't like a, you know, this isn't like, you know, a decision of where to go buy a sandwich. This is going to be a commitment that can last 28, you know, 25, 28, 30 years, mm-hmm. you know. What should a person be looking for in that discernment of who to trust in this process?
You know, we've been really lucky that we have wonderful partners and realtors. I think in any profession, you find really good, and then occasionally you find someone that's not as high of standards as others. You know, we've got some realtors on our board, and they're exceptional human beings. So we're fans of realtors. What I think is that throughout the real estate process, and I think throughout any process in your life, you know, really being sure that you are finding human beings that share your values. You know, it's why at Community Financial we're so outward with the values that we carry, because I think that when you share those and you're open about those, you invite people in that share those with you, and that's the very best way to find a good partner in life, whether it's through a real estate transaction or any other that you might be doing. So I think that that really matters. I think, you know, the good news in a world that's very transparent is that there's a lot of data that exists. So, you know, I think in any part of the process, whether it's, you know, the financing portion or the realtor portion or other elements, you know, there's lots of data to be had. And so being able to do that research, I think, is a really important way. And then, you know, the thing that I also think is helpful is that, you know, at Community Financial, we want to be really good partners for our members. And so when they've got questions about those things, you know, we want to walk with them through it.
So what are some of the questions I should even be looking to ask as people are looking to help in this process?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, again, any partner that you're going to have, I would be asking questions about how much time they've spent in this journey. You know,
experience.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. I think talking about, you know, what they can expect. So, you know, I would have some curiosities about, okay, so how long is this going to take? What am I going to experience with you? How are we going to work together? You know, those would all be questions that I think would be really important. And I think having good references and referrals is always a wonderful way to connect with people. So, you know, those are all things. Again, whether you're picking a bank or a financial institution, hopefully a credit union or a realtor, or again, any other partner on your journey to homeownership, I think those are good things to be thinking about.
I'm going to throw one in.
Okay.
This is just a Kari one. That often happens in a lot of sales. If it's urgency that seems to be pressing you or a little unreasonable, I'm not saying walk away from the deal, but be ready to walk away from that deal. Because a decision that could lock you in for 30 years is nothing that should be like, look, today, if you got it, we need a... And that could... And not, maybe not even money. It could be a signature. It could be a... You need to, you know, send something off or give some information. If it's a little too much urgency, I'm not necessarily saying that even means it's nefarious, but that can heighten my discomfort. Especially when I don't get the full context of, as you say, like, what can I expect from this process? And it's like, okay, it'll probably be about 4 weeks and da-da-da-da. And then you get a phone call 3 days later like, look, today, you ready? Day ready. You know, and not having the fear that, you know, not having the fear that if you don't move, this opportunity will not exist. Mm-hmm. You may miss out on that opportunity, but another opportunity will exist. I mean, we're in America. Everything is business. So it's not like you may not get that dream home, but possibly another dream home could present itself where you can think it through, be in a better comfort level, because decisions like this also are inclusive, as I talk about this too. It's like when you buy a home, a family's buying a home. Your friends are buying, like, everyone around you. It's going to, you know, it's going to impact the other dynamics of your quality of life probably. So if you have a vacation group, you always go on vacation. You know, you buy your home in May, You usually go on vacation in June. Your niece and nephew graduation is coming up. Certain things are going to impact possibly cash flow and other decisions. And maybe you may even have the money, but you may not have the time because now you painting the living room or something. Like, so that's the other thing, getting the buy-in from all of the stakeholders in your life.
Mm-hmm.
I believe can make that transition a whole lot easier. And you may also get some of those people to show up and help you put up some drywall.
Let's hope. Or help move.
That's a tough one.
That is a tough one.
It's like,
that's right.
I'm moving next Saturday. I got something.
Yes, very busy.
Exactly. It's like, oh man, you didn't know. but those are two that I would add. But I like both those.
Yeah.
Who are some of the people taking advantage of this program? What are their like backgrounds? Like, what are some of the stories that connect? That it's like, wow, that was really cool.
Yeah, you know, it's so fun to see. You know, we've had again people that were impacted by the tornado in Gaylord that maybe didn't think that there was going to be another choice for them in terms of homes. We've had lots of people that we've talked to who've been declined several times that haven't been able to find a financial institution as a really strong partner.
I gotta stop you.
Okay, stop me.
Because that does happen.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be tough.
Sure.
What type of resolve and advice do you give to that person if rejected? Because sometimes that happens. It's like, look, you know you got that that credit card for the, I don't know, whatever, the Dave and Buster's credit card. You know what I'm
Does
saying?
Does that exist?
Exactly. You know what I mean? Like,
yes,
you know,
yes.
And it's ruined. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yes.
You may need to clean up what you got. Mm-hmm. It may take 6-7 months.
Right.
But then you'll be in a better position.
That's right.
You know?
Yep.
But a person still may hear that as like, damn.
Right.
I keep getting no. Mm-hmm. Like, how do you keep that resolve? Like, how should a person look at keeping that resolve to stay moving forward and being active and not just falling into that defeatist attitude of, I don't understand money. All I know is they keep saying no.
That's right. Well, one, I think if you haven't found a partner in a financial institution for homeownership, give us a shot. You know, we want to be able to have those conversations, particularly if you've been paying rent. We believe that we've got an opportunity for you and would love to be able to look at that together. I think secondly, in terms of your question, and we decline people too, you know, that sometimes there are situations where we simply can't get to a yes. Even in those situations, we want to come up with solutions. And so we will always, if we are going through a decline with a member, talk through, okay, so here's the situation today. We want to get you to a yes. So here are some of the steps that you can take. And so, you know, again, I think if you're looking for a financial institution in the long term, that's the kind of organization that I would hope you find and the one that we are at Community Financial.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And In that flow, I guess that leads to just the larger picture.
Mm-hmm.
And we spoke a little bit about this before.
Mm-hmm.
So like I say, yeah, I can definitely be a business nerd. I know how to read a Wall Street Journal. Well, some pages in it, some of it's like, what is this? What is this?
But
in that, interest rates.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people intentionally, and one of my favorite finance teachers, Padilla. Mm-hmm. Shout out Padilla from Henry Ford.
That's good. I was like,
man, I don't like a lot of this economics and finance stuff because they intentionally try to deceive people with jargon. And then he turned around and looked at me sipping his coffee. He's like, yeah, that's exactly what we do it for. Shout out Padilla. But like certain things people don't understand, like the Federal Reserve, what an interest rate is, who sets the Fed, things like this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they just are seeing like this segment on the news and like, what the hell is this? And da, 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 da.
Yeah.
Okay, so obviously people know that not credit unions, but especially banks make money off of lending money from that interest.
Mm-hmm.
There are certain just natural, it's a certain interest rate that can be base level that's decided by the Fed.
Yeah.
For a while, just due to the pandemic, well, already even before the pandemic, things needed to be strengthened in this country.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes the Federal Reserve will say, we're zeroing out everything so that we can encourage people to buy a home, do some lending, buy a car, like engage in the market. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like a natural relationship. Mm-hmm. No one expected the pandemic to happen.
No.
That locked interest rates from the Fed at zero for like longer than it's like been ever in my lifetime.
Right.
So now slowly but surely things are inching up. And this is also where I think people can be deceived too, because it's like they're bringing up interest rates, and it's like I don't know if they're bringing them up, but they're just right fitting them. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I don't necessarily know if they're raising and hiking them, but that will obviously have an impact on mm-hmm. other lending too.
Absolutely.
Things like this, when to buy, how to buy, how mm-hmm. to even understand interest rates, mm-hmm. and it, like that education. Mm-hmm. You know, pulling out that financial calculator for you guys that went to business school with me and everything, and understanding what those rates will be, mm-hmm. The difference between, you know, that principal, that interest, mm-hmm. how soon do you get to paying on principal, how to move forward in paying principal and covering your interest. Like, these are all things that are deep into the business world that impact people. But oftentimes when I talk to people, they're thinking more on the payment.
Right.
They're just thinking, oh, it's $600 a month.
Yep.
It's $600 a month. Mm-hmm. It's $600 a month. And you keep paying that $600 a month, then it's going to possibly, depending upon what vehicle you're in, that'll become $750 a month. Mm-hmm. You know, and you're making other decisions the same way. Car mm-hmm. payment, house payment, the Dave and Buster's credit card payment. Nice. Like, how, so I know I gave a lot of preface in this. But that relationship and that learning curve,
mm-hmm.
how do you connect people to a better understanding of, like, okay, you can get in a better financial position yourself.
Right.
But start embracing some of these concepts beyond right. just the how much am I paying a month?
Right. Well, for us, that begins with the financial education. And, you know, one of the things that I have challenged us to do at Community Financial is be sure that we're connecting that to the real moments in time. Because, unfortunately, education doesn't often lead to behavior change, right? Mm-hmm. I always use the weight loss analogy here, right? All of us are really clear about what it takes to lose weight. You eat less and exercise more. That's right. That doesn't mean we don't have an obesity epidemic in this country, right? And when you think about financial education, for us, the responsibility that we have, I believe, is not only to provide financial education, but to take the jargon out of it. You know, I remember vividly my first year at my credit union. I didn't know what anybody was talking about for nearly 12 months because I hadn't worked at a financial institution anymore, and I surely wasn't going to ask, hey, what do you mean by that? And I can tell you to the day, I was in a leadership team meeting, and all of a sudden it was starting to click, and I knew what they were talking about. And what did I start doing? I start using the jargon, right? Because now I'm the cool kid and I know what they're talking about. Mm. It's our responsibility as a credit union to take the jargon out of it. You know, I think if you understand a really complex topic, it's your responsibility to talk about it in a way that is human, that is about stories, that connects people to it and brings them along with you. And so our financial education and what we're really building towards is that it is not only impactful, but it's connected to these moments in time. So as an example, in the schools, we're about to launch a new technology solution that allows kiddos to save, spend, and give, put it into those buckets. We could talk all day long about save, spend, and give. Mm-hmm. Kids are going to be, to your point, looking at their device. They're going to be bouncing a ball. They're not going to be paying any attention. When we can connect it to, okay, so what's a dream that you have? You're interested in buying a new gaming system. You want that phone you've been dreaming about. You want a new pair of shoes. Oh, okay, if you do your allowance, if you do the chores that you were assigned and you're getting your allowance and that goes into these buckets, how long is it going to take for you to get that toy that you want, that next thing that you're hoping for? Now that financial education and literacy becomes tangible, actionable, and sticks. And so that's what we really want to accomplish at Community Financial, is tying that financial education to the tangible products and solutions that make it real for human beings.
That's real. I like the conceptualizing that, because, you know, at times, Lord knows, even me with my understanding of everything in business, I know I'm not taking the time and the effort sometimes to explain, like, okay, this is why this is a better decision versus a bad decision.
Yeah.
It's almost like Stone Cold said something. You know, but that is usually what's needed. And my interpretation, like I say, is people look at the payment amount, mm-hmm. not the arc of the whole story, and say, like, okay, you can, this car lot is offering you this brand new Mercedes Benz that you never thought you would be able to get in your mm-hmm. life. And you're thinking to yourself, all I got to do is pay them $250 a week.
Right.
But technically, it's $250 a week, where if you follow through with this, mm-hmm. you'd be paying $250 a week for 10 years.
Mm.
You know? And it probably is not good, but you're thinking, well, you know, I get paid $1,500 a week, so $250. Well, what is that? You know, shifting the payment thinking and understanding the lifespan of where things go. And then just even asking just the natural question of, like, when do I get to principal? When do I get out of interest? Because mm-hmm. people are shocked sometimes to be like, man, I've been in this house for 10 years and I haven't paid anything on the principal.
Right. Yeah, you know,
no
again,
equity in
yeah,
this house.
Right. Well, and I think whether it's community financial or another, credit unions from the beginning, you know, we were born out of the Great Depression. And really, it's such a magical story of human beings that didn't feel like they had a safe place to take out a loan, didn't feel like they had a place that they trusted to put their money. And those two human beings coming together and saying, hey, I got a little money I want to save. I want to earn a little bit. You need to borrow a little bit of money. Let's come together and do that. It's people helping people, and our philosophy is about that education. So, you know, the entire credit union community is intended to ensure that everyday consumers have the education that they can then use to chase those dreams.
Okay. Now, entering this Detroit market.
Yeah.
Because the Detroit market is, when it comes to homes, I feel like just the vestiges of so much for years, the segregation, systemic racism impact a lot of things. One of the key big hurdles, I think, when I think in Detroit is it's not enough appraisers that are actually from the area. Mm. I mean, you call the average appraiser, they're like, yeah, I'll be down there. I'm about 30 miles out. You know, so there's a disconnect in that alone of what these property values are.
Mm.
Also, like in these housing stocks, you have to understand, like, yeah, it could be possibly a burned out, dilapidated, as they may say, blighted property, like next door to a great property.
Mm-hmm.
And like understanding the nuances of that. Mm-hmm. Entering this Detroit market, what's your attitude? And what's your thought process about engaging the people that want to buy a home in Detroit?
You know, our commitment is to be a part of every community that we serve. You know, we serve the entire state of Michigan. I can tell you my hometown of Hillsdale is a lot different than the town I live in now. That's Canton is a lot different than, you know, the branches that we have in our northern region. Every single one of our communities has unique needs, and our commitment is to become a part of that. You know, one of the things that we have brought to life is a partnership with the folks from Bargain Block, and, you know, they are bringing homes to life. And we, you know, as we started talking with them, what they were sharing with us were some of the challenges that they were facing and moving those homes into the hands of folks that were excited to purchase them. And, you know, the Path to Home Ownership program really came out of some of the challenges that they described to us, and being able to answer some of those, you know, being able to move more quickly towards closing, you know, being able to use something a little different in terms of qualification, like paying their rent regularly. So that's one. I think two, again, really finding time with people in communities to hear those challenges. You know, our belief at Community Financial is that listening is a superpower. You know, I don't have all the answers by any stretch of the imagination. And the place that we can come up with better answers is listening to communities where we're serving people and marrying that with the subject matter expertise that we have as a financial institution. And that is a combination for bigger success.
Okay. And as you, I guess, stay present in that listening. Mm-hmm. What are some of the things that you're listening for to pull from that community to understand how to better serve it?
Again, we want to hear about the biggest challenges, right? We want to hear, you know, what is preventing people from finding those homes? Are there challenges that they're facing with financing that we can solve in new and interesting ways? That's exactly what we heard as we started talking with Keith and Evan. The other thing that we know is that as we tell the story of a program like Path to Home Ownership, we're often going to be connecting with people who have, as we said earlier, heard no a lot of times. And so being able to share the story of Path to Home Ownership in different ways, you know, slapping it on a billboard's not going to help, because somebody that sees that billboard's likely to say, I don't know. Other financial institutions have said, no, why would I believe that community financial is going to be different? So finding opportunities, hopefully like this one and others, to be able to have conversations and share what we're doing and truly build trust. And what I know is that trust comes one day at a time, one relationship at a time. We've built something really cool that are called flex offices. And so, you know, today we have 14 branches across our great state. We are building more of those and dreaming about where those are going to be. Until we have them, these flex offices give us the opportunity to come into communities, to talk to people, to listen. And we hope that that's another way that we can open our ears and use what we hear to come up with new solutions.
Perfect, perfect. So with that, give some contact information.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, I'll head you to our website, so cfcu.org, and that's probably the easiest way to find us.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, thank you. As I got some different things stirring in the pot.
Yeah.
I can see some more connections possibly.
Good.
I definitely want to connect you all with some of the people that I know that you know, are interested in some things. This
good.
Was fun.
It was so great. Thanks for having me.
You gave some good game.
Good.
And in that game, I also, you know, kind of threw in some of my own perspectives of seeing what this journey will be like as a homeowner for a while now.
Yeah.
I can say that I can say it's a level of freedom that provides me some autonomy to take some of the business risk that I can take.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with that, it also comes with other responsibilities, like you know, the snowing today.
Fun.
Exactly.
We're back to winter.
But with that, you know, it can be an asset, and you can onboard yourself. And I don't necessarily think home ownership is as far away for certain people.
No.
But at the same time, as you said, like, you know, educate yourself, build that relationship.
Yeah.
You know, don't deal with somebody that's pushing. If you feel rushed,
mm-hmm.
probably stay at bay. And there's some resources out here.
Without question.
There's some resources. It may just take some time to find it. But then again, if you plan on being in this house for 30 years, I mean, don't you think you should probably spend more than like half a weekend looking into what you want to do? I mean, some of this is, you got to be smart yourself.
Without question. Thank you so much for having me. It's been such an honor.
Peace.
Black revolutionaries, distillery owners, Italian fashion retailers, and Motown Grammy winners all share their best stories never before told in any other media outlets on Detroit Is Different. Visit DetroitIsDifferent.com or download the Detroit Is Different app on Apple's App Store or Google's Play Store.